the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We're here at Oak Ridge Nissan today as you can come take advantage of their month-end closeout. It's the final weekend. First 50 customers to purchase a vehicle will get a $1,000 gift card to spend any way you want. And so we'll talk to you more about that throughout the course of the afternoon. But it's always a pleasure when we get to say hello, as well as get an update from our good friend Mike Barnett, video coordinator for the Cleveland Indians. He joins us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, John. Jimmy, good afternoon. It's good to hear you guys are out and about on a remote. That's good to hear.
It is good to hear, and it is a beautiful day to be out and about, at least with the blue sky that we see this way, although it looks like there could be a threatening cloud or two on the horizon. And I guess that might be the best way to describe conversations going on between Major League Baseball players and owners. With everything that seemed positive in moving back towards perhaps resuming spring training and getting closer to a point in time when the season could begin, it really has become almost a war of the words. What has it been like from your perspective, Mike, to see this play out as it is?
Well, it's been interesting. And, you know, the thing about it is, obviously the players, and we kind of had a feeling of that they were going to reject that proposal. And I think what's happening, though, is that there's, because of social media and because you have so many people interested in this, that there's a lot of perspectives, but I think there's a lot of misinformation. You hear about, in 1 minute that one side's really, or everybody's optimistic, and then you hear another source that says, oh, Major League Baseball's done, they're not going to have a season. And, you know, I think Scott Boras has gotten involved a lot. He's got over 100 clients that are very high-dollar clients, and he's certainly putting his opinion out there. But I think that really behind the scenes, again, I don't think, you know, both sides, they don't trust each other, that's for sure. But I really believe in the long run, I know the players are supposed to issue a counterproposal here within the next few days, and we haven't heard anything on that as of yet, but I really think that both the players and the owners know what's at stake, and they're going to come to an agreement what's best for the game. There's just so many things out there that are tough times right now. You look at all the minor league players that are being released, and probably a lot of clubs are going to stop paying employees and minor league players at the end of June. It's just a really tough time. But I think right now there's a lot of misinformation out there. But I really am confident. Will we get it done to open spring training on June 10th? I'm not sure. I think, you know, everybody feels that they've got to have some sort of an agreement in place by probably June 1st for that to happen. And then to have the three-week spring training and then hopefully open the season somewhere around July 1st. So right now it's kind of a wait and see, but I think everybody has to take everything they read on social media, in the news, everything with a little bit of a grain of salt right now.
Mike, do you think it would be advantageous on both parties' part to not negotiate in the media?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. There hasn't been a lot other than what the commissioner's office put out from the ownership side as to what they proposed. And I don't think, other than saying, you know what, we reject that and we feel that it's a salary cap and we're not going to go that direction or have the sliding scale from the player side. But you've had a lot of players who feel like they need to comment on it. And like I said, you've had Scott Boras, who has felt like he needs to, throw in his two cents on the negotiations, and he has absolutely nothing to do with the negotiations. So, yes, we would I'm up in Cleveland right now, and Tito and I went for a walk yesterday, and we were talking about it, and we're both pretty disappointed in the fact that it is all getting out to the media, and we both kind of go, wonder what is really true and what's not true. And so, yes, I would like to see them keep it out of the media, but out of the social media, I think it's going to be very tough because a lot of players have their own opinions on it.
Well, I think Scott Boras ought to keep his mouth shut, and maybe that's stronger than what you'd like to say, but I have a feeling you would not be upset if he kept quiet.
Oh, that's for sure, because I just think it's muddying the water. I really do, and I think, you know, certain players who he may not even represent then all of a sudden start forming their opinion around what he says. And because he's kind of a high-profile agent, then they start kind of taking on his way of seeing things, and I think we just really need to let the, you know, Major League Baseball and the Players Association work it out. And I'm still confident that we're going to get an agreement done because, like I said, both sides realize how much it's at stake, and there's got to be some give and take on all this, and I know that they realize that. Let's face it, everybody's going to lose money in this situation. The owners are, the players are. Let's figure out something that can work for this year for both of us and get the game back on the field.
I did see one report from ESPN that said that with there were a number of players in the union that don't want the owners to counter with something that they know the owners won't accept. Your thoughts on that?
You talk about the players countering with something. I agree. And I think, you know, we've heard all kinds of stuff that now that the players want to go to a 110-game schedule. And I don't know if – I really don't think that what's going to happen is that the ownership would take that right now. I think the ideal thing when they came out with it was prorating everything based on your regular salary, and let's get an 82-game schedule in. If we need to expand the playoffs, which interestingly enough was not in the owner's proposal, which we had seen before that they were going to expand the playoffs from 10 teams to 14 teams. So I think somewhere it'll probably end up being close to that where we get 82 games in and, you know, prorated salaries. I think right now that probably makes the most sense. But again, I think the players are kind of chomping at the bit, most of them, to let's get back playing and get doing this because we can't waste a whole year and we can't you know, string along the fans and not let them get back baseball as we want to see it right now.
Mike, what was your reaction to the number of players that were released yesterday? And there obviously are more to come with kind of the reshaping of the minor league system.
Yeah, it's sad to see. It really is. I hate to see that. But again, you know, one thing that's usually never reported on is at the end of a spring training with most organizations, you're probably going to have 40-some players that are going to be released out of every organization. And then they're going to have to, you know, hook on with an independent league club or with another affiliated club. It is sad to see. I really hate it. But I think now the media is making it like this is kind of a big deal and look what's happening because of COVID-19. Yes, there probably are a few more players that are being released in some organizations than you normally would have. But for the most part, you're going to see probably 30, 40, sometimes 50 players that will be released at the end of a spring training camp in the minor leagues.
And as far as, let's just say that one – calmer heads prevail and they are able to reach an agreement and they start playing ball. Is there any thought, what kind of conversation have you heard in regards to what do you do if there isn't AAA baseball as we're used to, and perhaps there still could be, what do you think? Would it be just perhaps a collection of players that would work out an extended spring training at their respective headquarters and be called up if need be, trying to stay as game ready as they can? How do you think they might handle having a group of players ready if indeed a team encounters a lot of injury?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think that there may be a camp out in Arizona or Florida that will have some minor league free agent players. There will also be a pool to pull from, not necessarily in your organization, but possibly to be able to sign. But really, I think the way it's going to be is every roster is probably going to have 30 players on your roster to start and when you open the season, and then you're probably going to have 20 players who are going to be on a taxi squad, and they will be at a facility, whether it be your spring training facility or, you know, in our case, we've got quite a few of our minor league affiliates around us, and they would probably go there and work out every day and continue to stay sharp. Probably not going to be a ton of fun for them, but it's going to be tough to get outside competition in. But they're just going to have to stay ready as best they can. And then when you have injuries, you'll pick from that pool of the extra 20 players and go from there. But trying to keep guys ready, that's going to be a thing. So it's not going to be fun because guys love competition. And when you're doing simulated games every day and things of that nature, it can be a little tedious. So, but it's something we've tried to prepare our players for and had them all on Zoom calls and said, look, we've got to do this better than the other 29 teams, and we've got to realize it's going to be different, and we've got to just commit to being one team, one organization, and doing it the best we can for the next 3-4 months.
Mike, I want to go back to this and see. I don't know if you'd have an answer, but I do want to check with you on this. So the proposal by the owners on having a greater reduction for the higher-paid players down to a lesser reduction for the lesser-paid players, do you know if that came close to a 50-50 revenue split?
That I don't know. I know that that's originally what they were floating. I would think that it would probably might even be the pool of money would probably be less than the 50-50 revenue split, what they were talking about coming out of. But I don't know that for sure. I really don't. And, you know, Major League Baseball, they keep their books pretty well shut. And that's one thing that they don't want to open up. And what would the 50-50 revenue look like? And based on their proposal, I'm really not sure. But I would venture to say it was probably a little bit less.
Do you think Major League Baseball should open their books in this situation to help with negotiations?
You know what? That's tough for me to make a call on. I think it would certainly get trust on both sides much better for sure. So in saying it, you know, on the surface, I would say, yeah, that would be great. But again, if they don't have to open up their books, I don't think the owners are going to, and I guess that's their prerogative. But I think it would certainly open up the trust between both sides for sure.
I can't vouch for the accuracy of this, but I did see an ESPN report that said if they go with the prorated salary for the players over this 82-game schedule, that the split would be 89% players, 11% owners. Do you have any knowledge if that's accurate?
I don't have any knowledge of that's accurate either, but I would probably say that it's not. I would think that there's no way that even the owners would talk about the 50-50 split, and then if it actually happened with the prorated salaries that they're going to come out on the end of 89-11, I just can't see that happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's – and anybody that really – is making those predictions, I don't think that they can because they're not in every ownership's, they're not the accountants. And I think they're just speculating, and it's just something, again, like I said, there's a lot of misinformation out there that's being floated, and I can't believe that that would be the case.
Okay. Mike, as we've talked with you a couple of times during this, it was interesting to see that some folks were kind of penciling in and circling June 10th as a possible return date as far as teams getting back together, maybe training together, and getting closer to resuming spring training. And it seemed as though Cleveland was the franchise that had the most set plans in regards to this. I just want to hear what have the Zoom calls been like, still doing the video chats, and how ready do the guys seem when it comes to just talking with their coaches, you and Terry and everybody?
Well, I mean, our guys are ready to go. And like I said, we have just talked about and we really praised the players the other day because they have really done a good job of, you know, they send in videos of their workouts, the pitchers when they've done simulated side games where they stretched out to three innings. Our guys have really done a tremendous job, like, staying in communication. I don't know if all the other clubs have been able to do that with guys, but we have a great group of guys, which really helps. And I know that now we have about four or five of them here in Cleveland that are already here and working out at the stadium. They've been given the graces to do that. We've got other 40-man guys, roster guys, that are out in Arizona working out and ready to go since Major League Baseball has opened that up. And like I said, our guys are chomping at the bit and ready to go, and we've just really made it clear to them that it's not going to be your normal spring training. And the biggest things, we know that they're hitting, we know that they're probably taking ground balls, but the thing that you really worry about when you get back into this and have a short spring training is, are guys' arms going to be in game-ready shape where they don't have sore arms and a problem like that? And we've focused on that the last few weeks. And also their legs, to make sure that they're really out there running, running the bases if they can, if they can get to a field and do that, because that's going to be huge, because that's the biggest thing that set guys back, even in regular spring training, that don't come in the greatest of shape, is their arms being in game shape and their legs being in game shape. The other part of it shouldn't be a big deal as far as position players go, but our pitchers have done a really good job of stretching themselves out. And right now, everybody's healthy, which is great to see, and they're ready to go.
Mike, I got one more for you. You've been in baseball for at least 40 years, and I am certain you have an affinity for minor league baseball. And with the way it's going, with the number of players cut and so forth, there are some minor league franchises that may not be able to continue. Buster Olney with ESPN said that he thinks the five-round draft, the players cut and all that, he just said he thinks there are going to be a number of would-be Major League Baseball players that will never get a chance. Do you think that is true, and how much does that concern you?
It really concerns me, and, you know, I think Buster's absolutely right on that, and the fact that minor league baseball is the grassroots of our game, the major league game, and I just think they're concerned about having, you know, wanting to really have fans and everything like that. This, you know, cutting out the minor leagues, especially the low minor leagues, is really going to take your fans from Pulaski, Virginia, or Bristol, you know, to Johnson City, to be able to, you know, grow with these players. And, hey, I saw him when he was in rookie ball, and he went to low A ball, and then high A ball. They maintain that. And when you don't have that, it's going to be very hard to keep that fan base that you have. And I hate to see it. You look at a guy like Don Mattingly, who I think, Donnie was probably a 17th round draft pick, and what a great player he was. And you see it all the time, guys that were undrafted that get to the major leagues. How are they going to do that now? And a lot of clubs have gone away from, having a lot of professional scouts out there. Well, how are you going to get to be seen if you don't have scouts out there looking now at the affiliated minor leagues, which may only be four levels, yet alone looking out at all the independent leagues? And I think there's going to be a lot of teams that will be able to survive because they'll probably move into an independent league situation. There's going to be places for guys to play, but how well is that going to get covered? And I think that, you know, players will slip through the cracks that we won't get to see in the major leagues that probably would have had a very good chance to get there.
Yeah, I think Mike Piazza was famously a late-round draft pick.
Very much so. Yeah.
We always appreciate it. Great to hear that you're in Cleveland. I hope everybody remains safe and sound, and we can get closer to actually the focus of baseball being on the diamond as opposed to a boardroom or meeting room. But take care, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
That sounds great, John. Jimmy, you guys have a great afternoon. I'll catch up with you later.
All right. Thank you so much. That's our friend Mike Barnett, video coordinator for the Cleveland Indians, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. Sports Talk continues today. We're at Oak Ridge Nissan. It is the final weekend in the month of May, which means great savings for you. It's the month-end closeout. Come take advantage of incredible options. You can buy with no money down. Get up to $7,000 over Kelley Blue Book for your trade. You can go with 0% interest for up to 84 months or go with no payments until 2021. And customers who purchase a vehicle, new or used, will get a $1,000 gift card to spend any way you want. Don't make a $10,000 mistake over a 10-minute drive. Make the short drive from anywhere and save thousands here at Oak Ridge Nissan. Sports Talk continues on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNNL.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And before we continue with the program, let's check in with our sister station, News Talk 98.7, as we say hello to Alex Abernathy. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. What's going on today?
Well, we have had a busy, busy, busy day with all things news today, not just coronavirus related, but we will keep it there for the sake of this segment. In terms of a national scale, usually I like to keep these segments just local, but in wake of the coronavirus and how it's been handled around the world, Donald Trump announced that the U.S. is cutting ties with the World Health Organization, which of course is a major blow to the WHO as they will lose a large, large bulk of their funding. They released a statement last week whenever it was said that the U.S. was considering pulling out of the WHO. They talked about the ramifications of losing that kind of funding, and sure enough, they are, as the U.S. has announced, that they are no longer involved with the World Health Organization. Now more locally, Tennessee's new statewide COVID-19 numbers show an increase of 406 in the number of cases, and that pushes the total to 22,085 cases of coronavirus in the state. There have been 14,965 recoveries and 360 deaths. That is an increase of 4 from yesterday associated with COVID-19. Also, in recent news, just about 30 to 45 minutes ago, Governor Bill Lee was on the Paul Feinbaum show and answered some questions from Feinbaum. He talked about how Tennessee is a top testing state. I know we've talked about that a lot recently. He referenced that same Harvard study that I've been talking about with you guys for the last week that said that Tennessee is one of the top testing states. And that study did clarify that Tennessee is not only one of the best testing states, but the best testing state in the United States in terms of testing per capita and who we've tested and been able to find cases and limit deaths because of the testing and quarantining that we've been doing in the state. Also, Bill Lee was asked about sports, so I figured this would be the most important on your end. So when talking about sports, the first thing Bill Lee did was he talked about how excited he is to get some form of live sports back this weekend with the races going on in Bristol on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And he talked about why it's so important for him to bring sports back in a timely manner to Tennessee. He talks about how everybody right now really just wants to get back to normal. And usually that's where people's arguments stop. They say we need sports back because it's a sense of normalcy and we want to get back to normal. He took it further. He said not only does sports bring back a sense of normal, but it brings back a sense of consumer confidence when trying to get the economy back up and rolling. He talked about that feeling of normalcy of seeing sports on TV that are local will give consumers confidence to go out. And even if they're not going directly to sporting events, it will give them the confidence to go out and spend money and get this economy back up and running, as we have seen record unemployment lately, especially in our neighbor to the east here, Sevier County. They've seen almost 30% unemployment last month. So that's what we have right now. Also thought you guys might enjoy to know that Governor Bill Lee said before he goes to bed most nights, he has been watching some old college football reruns. Don't know if they're Tennessee games because he is an Auburn graduate, but he's been watching some old college football games. Guys, our COVID-19 coverage is brought to you by Advanced Heat, AC, and Plumbing. As always, your family's comfort is their family business.
Alex, appreciate the information. Thanks for the week's worth. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. You too, guys.
All right, sure to appreciate it. And Governor Lee has time and time again proven that he is indeed an Auburn guy. We'll get a break and be back with David Cobb as he joins us next to talk some hoops on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Here. Hour number two of Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline as we're coming to you from Oak Ridge Nissan right here where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue, and we get to say hello to David Cobb. He works for CBSSports.com, and he has covered Tennessee athletics. He has also covered the Memphis Grizzlies, and in January joined the CBS Sports team. David, how are you?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. I'm actually getting up there to Knoxville this weekend. I'm going to be spending a few days up there to see the in-laws, going to play some golf, and hopefully have a nice time in a familiar part of the state.
Well, it'll be great to have you back in these parts. What has it been like to take on national coverage as you have?
You know, it's different. When I covered Tennessee for the Times Free Press, you know, you get so locked in to your Tennessee bubble, your SEC bubble. And when you go to cover games, be it football or basketball, you kind of end up spending your entire day focused on that one game. But being in this more national role, you have more of a chance to sort of sit back and survey the scene as a whole. So I actually feel like I know more about college basketball now, just a few months into this gig, you know, than I did even as a beat writer in Knoxville. I don't know as much about Tennessee basketball as I did necessarily. But I was able to watch the balls and able to watch ball around the country, too. So it's been nice. Kind of feel like I'm a little bit more well-rounded now. You know, I can actually talk intelligently about other leagues and whatnot. So it's been a fun change.
You just recently put together your top 15 graduate transfers that have made a move to their new school. One on that list still undecided, but were you surprised at all to have six members, more than a third of that group, be on their way to the SEC for hoops?
You know, actually, I didn't even realize that until you said it, but I'm not surprised. The SEC is really, really reloading. I mean, the SEC did a phenomenal job in the 2020 class. And, I mean, about a quarter of these players are attributable to what Eric Musselman is doing at Arkansas. I mean, they assembled a really impressive class. That I would rank just behind Tennessee's in terms of prestige out of the 2020 class. And they've also got some graduate transfers coming in as well. So credit to what Musselman is doing at Arkansas. He's responsible for a lot of it. But, I mean, Rick Barnes and his crew are cleaning up, too. I mean, we all know how good their 2020 class is. But yeah, I mean, E.J. Anasicki makes this list for me at number 15. I think the SEC is going to have a serious rebound year in hoops next season. There's no doubt this was a down year. The fact that Kentucky was able to win it as easily as they did is, I guess, a little bit of a dip to where the league has been in years prior. But the fact is, with no NCAA tournament, the SEC, I think, was able to avoid any sort of negative perception nationally because we didn't have to deal with the storylines of them only getting three or four teams in. And when we get back to normal in this next college basketball season, I expect the league to be good again and maybe be a league that, you know, gets back to that level of having something close to half of its teams make the NCAA tournament field.
David, this is Jimmy Hyams. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, Jimmy, how you been?
Doing great. You mentioned Anasicki. Do you feel like he is going to give them the inside rebounding presence and perhaps the physicality that last year's team might have lacked?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he's going to take a lot of pressure, I think, off of John Fulkerson. E.J. Anasicki is only 6'6", but he's thick, and he's got that Grant Williams build, and he's not going to be a star like Grant Williams was. That's the role he played at Sacred Heart. But this is a new level, so he's not going to be a walking double-double necessarily like he was at Sacred Heart. But he's going to keep John Fulkerson from having to fight for every single rebound. And he's going to help clog the middle on defense in a way that Tennessee kind of missed last year. I mean, Tennessee has some promising younger post players. I mean, obviously, Juris Plavsic, Drew Pember, and Kamwuru. Those guys have promise, but they weren't really ready, I don't think, to really compete at a high level last year. It was a developmental year for all of them. And so Anasicki coming in with 1 year to play, I think will allow those guys to continue to develop and take some pressure off of Fulkerson. I mean, we already know that Tennessee's going to be a much more talented team next year. So the fact is John Fulkerson's scoring average might dip. I don't think that'll be because he's in any way regressed. I think this will allow John Fulkerson, if anything, to continue to get better, potentially even improve his outside game. You know, I could see them doing some high-low stuff with Fulkerson in the high post and Asiki in the low post. So I think it's a huge addition for Tennessee. And it's the reason why I included him on here is because I think he can take Tennessee kind of maybe to a next level.
His production did not come at an SEC level, but do you think that rebounding translates well from a smaller school to the SEC?
Yeah, I think so. I was looking it up the other day when I was assembling this list. And, you know, look, he played competition with guys that aren't as big as the guys he'll play against in the SEC. If you look at some of his games against power conference opposition last season, he had 20-12 against Providence. Providence was going to be an NCAA tournament team. So I know that's not a huge sample size, but if you look deeper, as a sophomore, Sacred Heart went up against Boston College, and Anasicki had 22-9 in that game. So, again, Boston College is not an elite program by any stretch, but it is a power conference program on par with some of the teams that, you know, Tennessee will play night in and night out, and Anasicki produced against them. And the other thing, too, is his leadership. You know, he's a guy who graduated in 3 years. His sister knows everything about what it means to be a Vol, therefore he does as well, I think. So he'll bring just a veteran presence and I think a low-ego rebounder. So, yeah, I do think the rebounding will translate because, yeah, he's only 6'6", but if he's 245 pounds as advertised and he's rebounded as well as he did at that level, it's going to translate.
Our guest, David Cobb, who writes for CBSSports.com. And, David, in talking about the Anasicki family, we do know that, one, it's a great work ethic, and, of course, that plays right into what Rick Barnes expects out of those that suit up for him. But what do you think that means? I mean, EJ very familiar with Knoxville already, so for somebody to make the change in the move that he's doing, he at least comes to an area that he's thought of that has at least a home-style feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah, and folks in Knoxville are pretty quick to embrace people who embrace them. And EJ Anasicki will no doubt embrace Tennessee. I mean, I'm remembering Lou Evans from a few years ago. I mean, he didn't even do that much, but the fans loved him because he seemed to love Tennessee. I'd expect Anasicki to get the same reception. You know, his sister is one of the all-time greats. I mean, maybe it's a slight exaggeration, but not much. I mean, she was part of some really good teams at Tennessee under Pat Summitt. And still in the area, if I'm not mistaken, as a high school coach. And so, you know, I think that plays into this well. I think he understands the tradition. He understands the expectations. And I think it's a huge get for Rick Barnes. Because I mentioned those 300 post players earlier, and we know they're adding Corey Walker to the mix, who could end up being a really nice player. He was a top 100 recruit who's going to probably play some in the post. But Anasicki's a couple of years older than those guys, all of them, and you know he's done it. He's proved it at a high level, and you know again I don't want folks to think that you know they see him on this list and just expect him to put up the same sort of numbers that he did at Sacred Heart. But remember a guy like James Daniel, you know, who came in from Howard, and no, he didn't average 27 points a game like he did at Howard. But he played a really nice role for that Tennessee team, and I would expect Anasicki's role to maybe even be bigger than the role that James Daniel played because of the position that he plays, because of the fact that the Vols do need a little bit of brawn, you know, down low to kind of take that next step.
And just taking a quick look at where else you've got some guys that are joining the Southeastern Conference that are graduate transfers. You mentioned Coach Musselman with a couple of members of your list of 15 that are on their way to join the Razorbacks. You've got one on their way to Georgia, and somebody who probably could use the help. He had a quality player, kind of an all-SEC type player, but Kermit Davis has a couple of big hitters that are in this group of graduate transfers. Ole Miss could use a shot in the arm, couldn't it?
Yeah, I'm excited to see what a guy like Romello White does at Ole Miss. he's leaving Arizona State where, I mean, they were, Arizona State was going to be loaded this next season. And so, you know, Romello White sees a roster that is chock full of really good talent, and he would have been a part of that rotation. I don't think there's any doubt. But he can come to a place like Ole Miss where Kermit's trying to recapture that magic he had in year one after a little bit of a down year this past year. I could see him being a guy who averages, you know, 13-8 or something for Ole Miss and kind of helps get them back to that 20-win plateau. So like I said, guys, you know, you're spot on in pegging the SEC as being benefactors of this graduate transfer cycle. And after a really great just regular recruiting cycle as well, I think this league's going to be back on the upswing. And another guy that just missed this list, in fact, for me, it was between Anna Sicky and Kevin Marfo for this last spot. And Marfo is a guy, similar build as Anna Sicky. He played at Quinnipiac up in the Northeast as well, and he was a double-double sort of guy up there. He's going to Texas A&M. And I went with Anna Sicky over Marfo because I think Tennessee's going to be better, and therefore I think Anna Sicky will play a bigger role on a better team. But Marfo could be an impact player as well, and he just missed his list. So that's another SEC guy, probably in the top 16 of this year's graduate transfer cycle.
David, there was a college analyst that said he thought Tennessee had Final Four potential. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. This is going to be a very fascinating year. They have the number four recruiting class in the country. I mean, we're talking a lot about Tennessee's football class. I know you guys are, and rightfully so, for the work Jeremy Pruitt and his staff are doing. But this basketball class, I think, is the best in school history. I think it's better than any class that Pearl assembled. And, of course, that'll ultimately judge based on the results. But, yeah, they have a chance to be a Final Four team. The thing is, with Rick Barnes, when at Texas he started getting these five-star guys, the success didn't really translate quite like he thought it might. But my expectation with this group is that they have strategically recruited guys who they think and personality and work ethic and the sort of systems that they come from will fit what they're trying to do, because they realize what a special group they had with Admiral and Grant and Bone and all those guys were around. And I think they're trying to replicate that in the sort of character of the guys that they recruit. And so these guys have the five-star billing, but I think they sort of have the MO of what Tennessee is looking for. And it's just going to be a matter of how quickly they can blend all that together. But the talent is no doubt there for this team to make a deep run.
Hey, David, we really appreciate the time. And, of course, folks can follow you on Twitter at David W. Cobb, as well as follow your work at CBSSports.com. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have safe travels. Can't wait to have you back in East Tennessee for a bit. And we look forward to having on with you again in the future.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Thanks,
thank you so much. And that's David Cobb of CBSSports.com joining us on the Stanley Fenton and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. When we return, we close out hour number two of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle.
This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And why don't we go back to the hotline and catch up with Scott Grob, who joins us as today we're brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan. We're here right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Scott, how are you?
We're doing great. How's it going, John?
Well, you tell me, because it seems like it's pandemonium. It's one big announcement after another this afternoon.
Yes, it is. I'll tell you what a great start to the weekend, the final weekend of the month, and our month-end closeout, and we're pulling all the stops, folks. If you can hear the sound of my voice, we've got 0% financing for up to 84 months. No payments till next year, folks. If you need a break from those payments, no payments till next year, happening right here at your number one volume Nissan dealer, Oak Ridge Nissan, and like I say, or maybe you want a stimulus gift card. You spent yours already and you need another one. Come on in. We'll get you a $1,000 stimulus gift card with the purchase of a new or pre-owned vehicle. So there's lots of things going on, lots of ways to make deals. And I'll tell you what, folks, if you got a trade, you got it made, loading up in the trades up to $7,000 over Kelly Blue Book so I can pay it off no matter what you owe. And all you got to do is make that 10-minute drive.
Because you're not worried about the mule going blind, are you?
That last thing I'm worried about, you know that, John.
Get more for yours, pay less for theirs, and it takes how long to get here?
It's a 10-minute drive to save thousands of dollars, that's for sure.
That's Scott Gropp. Come on out here. Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Back with hour number three of Sports Talk, and it starts with Steve Caldwell. He joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.